Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Masters, be with us as we gather in satsang, together in truth, in harmony, and in joy. Make us one with Thee. Teach us how to keep our minds upon Thee and purify our minds so that we might be ever one with Thee. You are the everlasting life, the bliss, the light of this entire creation and beyond. Without you, we are nothing. With you, we become everything. Teach us that which we should know in order to rise high into thy consciousness. Amen. This last week we had Kriya initiation. For those new ones coming on the path, and I have written this letter as a follow-up. Dear Kriyabhans, you have received one of the greatest gifts that can be bestowed upon an aspirant, what Paramahansa Yogananda called the airplane route to God realization. The ability to balance, magnetize, and awaken the spiritual energy in the spine and the brain through Kriya Yoga will lead to spiritual enlightenment. There are many ways to awaken this spiritual consciousness: chanting, deep prayer, living a natural, pure life. But Kriya, more than any method I know, works directly and powerfully with the centers of spiritual awakening. Like any technique, it will serve you best when applied properly and according to instructions. Commit yourself to practice twice daily, never in a mechanical fashion, but with attention and devotion, and always keeping your mind on God. As I said during our time together, the Guru's disciple relationship is unique. You may have many teachers, but only one Sat Guru. I have pledged my life to your progress, even as you have pledged yourself to this path. Let us work diligently each day, not only to advance spiritually through deepened meditation. Let us also serve those around us who God has given us to serve. Feel that you are an instrument of His light, love, and goodness. As Mother Hamilton once said, if you work half as hard to get your realization as I work for you so that you may have your God realization, you will get there in a hurry. Now that you are a Kriyabhan, a practitioner of Kriya Yoga, you have joined a fraternity of great souls in our Guru lineage and all sincere Kriya practitioners. Seek to make yourself worthy of this association. Be sincere and dedicated, and you will make rapid progress. Be aware of pitfalls of delusion and ego-driven nature. Immediately put yourself back on the path if you falter in any way. Remember, it is far easier to pluck a weed out of the earth when it is small and the ground is wet than waiting as it grows and digs in deeper. A real battle is then necessary. Daily vigilance is essential. My love and blessings are with you always. Do not hesitate to contact me regarding specifics of Kriya. Do not ask other Kriyabhans, as you may get misinformation. Whenever possible, I will respond right away. When this is not possible, be persistent. My work for God does not always allow me an immediate response. You may also contact Carla for information and appointments as well. Ever in the light of the Masters. Today I'm swimming in an ocean of bliss and resonance of this Kriya initiation. What a tremendous time. Each one of us are blessed and twice blessed to be upon this spiritual path. There are those who seek for the exact knowledge of how to progress spiritually, and yet they do not find it. They perhaps read books and they go to different ones who can teach them different methods. But the ability to go all the way, as Mother said, to go the last mile, is unique in this world. And it is a rare thing to have happen, so when we are offered that, we should grab hold of it with everything that we have and let it take us on the journey that's been promised. Reading from the Cross and Lotus Journal, article from Mother Hamilton, I want you to know that God is within you and that He is your Father, that He is the one and the only one that you should be keeping your attention on. We limit Him. We do Him a disservice. We do a disservice to every great master who ever walked the earth when we limit them, because we should become one with that universal Christ here. He said, Lo, I am with you always. He is in every single one of us. This consciousness, this Christ consciousness, and you must go through that consciousness into the infinite, to the Father who is beyond that. Do you understand? It isn't like we haven't been told, like we've been told. We've made a fetish of this thing. We have limited God, that is, limiting Him to a single individual. Is God so limited that He can only make one divine Son? I can't accept that any more than I can accept the fact that God is evil. I could not worship a God who was evil, and yet He is all there is. I ask you to take a look at evil. If we have been taught that we were all children of God, if we had taught to love God and each other, that everything is wonderful and beautiful, that our supply is always there, ready, waiting for us, if we will but open our hearts and our minds to receive it, it will pour upon us so infinitely that it is indescribable. I know that this is true, because I am not telling you something I read out of a book or that somebody told me. I have lived this. I have paid the price for knowing. I am not talking off the top of my head. I know what I'm talking about. And if I can do it, with as little as I has had to start with, I don't think there's anybody in the world that can't do it with given normal intelligence. No one. I've pulled myself up by my bootstraps, so to speak, with God's help. I've had to lean on Him, look to Him for everything. But I want to learn. I plan to learn, keep on learning, until the last breath I draw, because everybody is so great that he can't learn something. Excuse me, because nobody is ever so great that he can't learn something. And from every single one who comes, I receive as well as I give, I assure you. As I've told you, many of you have come here before. The very privilege of sitting here talking to you about God, of turning myself over to Him completely, of letting Him speak to you through this form, of communing with Him, of listening to what He says through this form, is greater reward than I can tell you. So you have done me a tremendous service to come, and I hope that, in turn, the truth which He gives you will permeate your consciousness, will take hold of you, and if you will reach out for a new life, that you will have the courage to really put your feet on the path and go forward and reach out for God. We are all the separate cells of His one body, each and every one of us, all work together in harmony. Now, if we can work together in harmony, if we can tune in and listen to the music of the spheres, and it is beautiful when you come to that state of consciousness where you can hear this music which brought this whole universe into being, you are uplifted as you have never been before. And the quote from Plutarch, the soul of man is a portion or a copy of the soul of the universe and is joined together on principles and in proportions corresponding to those which govern the universe. Isn't that magnificent to know that 2,500 years before, Plutarch and other great masters knew this truth, that your soul is the microcosm of the soul of the universe, which is the macrocosm. And the same life that came about and formed itself as this universe, it's the same life and the same intelligence which is within you. It's the most remarkable, incredible realization that can come to us. Because suddenly we are at home with God, wherever we are at. You know, most of the time we are told, and we think about God being within our heart. But the truth is also that we are in the heart of God, and that really, if we would know it, we are surrounded with God. We are living in God, because this entire creation and everything that is in it and beyond it is of God, because there is only one reality. And I'd also like to read from Yogananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, from chapter 8, verse 6. O son of Kunti, Arjuna, that thought which a dying man leaves the body determines, through his long persistence in it, the next state of his being. Therefore, remember me always, and engage thyself in battle of activity. Surrender to me thy mind and thy understanding. Thus, without doubt, shalt thou come unto me. He attains the high effulgent Lord, O Arjuna, whose mind, stabilized by yoga, is immovably fixed on the thought of him. At the time of death, the yogi reaches the supreme effulgent Lord if, with love and by the power of yoga, he fully penetrates his life force between the eyebrows, the seat of the spiritual eye. And if he fixes his mind unswervingly on the being who, beyond all delusions of darkness, shines like the sun, the one whose form is unimaginable, subtler than the finest atom, the supporter of all, the great ruler, eternal and omniscient. Master's Commentary. Pointed out in these verses are the three qualifications by which a great yogi passes from his physical body into the divine essence. First, love of God. Second, mastery of that kingly science, Kriya Yoga, by which he can usher his consciousness into the infinite through the agency of the single eye in the forehead. Third, perfect control of the mind, made possible through constancy in yoga, that enabled him to place his thought undeviatingly on the Lord at the time of death, an hour whose finality is always known in advance by a true yogi. These stanzas, making two references to God as light, the supreme effulgent light, and the being who shines like the sun, also mention a specific yoga technique. The point Krishna wished to make by such a juxtaposition is that a man who devotes himself to yoga beholds the Lord as light. In meditation, a great yogi takes his ego, life force or prana, and consciousness beyond his physical body to a vast realm ablaze with soothing light. The radiance, as from a thousand suns, dissolves into an ever new display of multicolored rays issuing from an endlessly enlarging spherical fountain. The single eye in the forehead of man possesses spherical vision. In meditation, that vision gradually expands for the yogi into an ineffable sphere of constantly changing luminosity, blissful and omnipresent. After experiencing this vibratory vision of Om as cosmic light, The emancipated yogi goes beyond all delusive relativities of vibrations. He then feels and realizes the transcendental Lord. He who persists behind the transitory dreams of cosmic matter and its myriad components of cells, molecules, atoms, electrons, and protons, life-trons or prana, and thought-trons, or that basic element of the causal body. In the transcendental state, God spins out his dreams of ideational or causal, the astral, and the physical universes. The physical cosmos, with its many island universes floating in the eternal void, is encircled by a nimbus of radiant energy that melts away into the larger astral world. The astral cosmos is grander manifestation of creation than the physical, and runs through and beyond the latter. In the astral cosmos, many luminous galaxies of various densities and their astral, solar, and stellar systems are roving in vaster space sphere of eternity. The largest, or the causal cosmos, contains countless causal galactical systems, with their suns and planets roaming all through the physical and astral cosmoses, as far beyond their boundaries and to the outermost sphere of vibratory space. The causal universe is the womb of creation. In the causal universe, God's finest creative forces of consciousness and highly evolved beings with their intuitive processes objectify universes from subtle divine thought forces. This is a stupendous vision that Master is laying out before us. And we might, in our imagination, stretch our minds out to see exactly what he's talking about. But greater still is when we come to intuitive apprehension and we really feel it, experience it, and know it through direct experience. This little mud ball of the earth is just such a tiny manifestation of the material cosmos of this entire universe. And this universe is vast beyond knowing. I remember seeing a photo from the Hubble spacecraft, the telescope above the Earth atmosphere. And it showed what appeared to be many stars, over 10,000, it said, that it counted them. Only they weren't stars. They were all galaxies. And within each one of the galaxies were many tens of thousands of stars. And so we get a sense of how vast, and that's just a tiny little square that was being taken a picture of what was visible to that telescope. This really physical universe is something tremendous to behold. And then we come to realize that this universe is just one of many island universes that are floating within a vast void. And there's an aura shining from all these material creations, an aura of light that gradually moves from this void and these physical creations and merges and melts into the astral realm. And the astral realm is tremendously huge beyond this physical creation. Sri Yukteswar said that the material cosmoses hang like a tiny basket under the large balloon of the astral cosmos. And so we move our consciousness out further, and the astral cosmos is filled with light. And it is a much easier life there for its inhabitants than in this dense cloud of atoms that we call the material creation. There is much more expansion. And light penetrates much more easily, and there is more natural attunement to the light. There isn't the struggle of life and death that's constantly going on, as there is here in the material creation. And so then if we go even further than that, we would go out into an aura beyond all the vast different astral creations. And then we move out into the universes of the causal, which are much more immense than anything that's in the astral, much less the tiny little material. And there is a refinement within the consciousness and within the mind that is very easily attuned to the infinite light, the infinite consciousness, the infinite expanse. And yet there is still a thin layer of separation between the individuality and the universality that is God. And beyond the causal, you merge directly into spirit, and there you lose all definition. You lose all subject-object. There is no longer subject and object. Since the mind can't conceive beyond subject and object, it really can't conceive what that is. It can try to imagine it, but it can't really. And there you merge into your oneness with the infinite bliss and joy and light that is God. Now, when we come down through the various levels of creation from out of spirit comes the causal, the blueprint for everything else that is created. And from that, atoms are quickened into energy and light, and it comes into the astral. And from that, the atoms then begin to condense themselves into denser and denser creations until this material creation comes into being. And so this is the way that it is. And from that infinite bliss and light comes everything else. Now, when we look out through these two eyes, we don't see that everything is in perfect harmony. It's not in perfect bliss. It's not in perfect joy. Far from it. We see that man is striving against man, that animal strives against animal, that there is death and destruction every single day in order for life to continue. And it's a tough, tough place. It's the spiritual boot camp of creation. And so we've come here to learn. Now, so many people come here and they get enmeshed into this life. There are many wonderful areas to explore, and we can do that. We're free to do that, but we don't really know what to do and how to do it unless we have our union with God. So why do we find ourselves in a state of separation? It is because in our soul's journey, we made the decision at some point. We became entranced with this material creation. We wanted to experience it. And we wanted to experience it in our individuality. And as individuality began to grow in us, we began to think how wonderful it would be to be cut loose of divine will, because now we could be free to make whatever decisions we wanted to. And this idea, at first subtle, begins to grow, and it has its consequences. Because as we eat of that fruit, of the apple of knowledge of good and evil, we separate ourselves from the divine intuition and more rely upon the human mind and its will. Then we enter into that state of separation. And then, amazingly, that state of separation grows so greatly in each one of us that we forget who we are. We forget that we are ever united in God. We completely go into a state of amnesia. And it's a remarkable thing, considering the fact that it's always there. That connection is always there, but we act as if it isn't. And then one day, the divine energies within us coalesce. Perhaps we begin to start missing our home, our real home, our cosmic home with God. Or perhaps there's some trauma that happens in our life that shakes our delusion that this world is the be-all, end-all. And we put ourselves and our feet on a path. We start taking steps back towards God. We realize that this world is not all that it's sold to be. And it will never fulfill our happiness, not our lasting happiness. Everything is temporary. And for every little temporary happiness we have, we have something else negative and bad happen to us every single time. And so those that we love are taken from us, and we feel the pang of separation. Those things that we accumulate, eventually they turn to rust, we lose interest in them, or ultimately death takes us away from them. And so we suffer the separation from that as well. And so we, in a human state, live in a state of suffering. And that is the first premise of the Buddha. Life is suffering. Now, obviously, he didn't mean that every stage of life is suffering, because he himself was living in that state of bliss, of nirvana. But in a human state, life is suffering, because ultimately, without knowing anything beyond this little limited human life, everything will be taken from us. And so when we come to that moment of death, it's a real breaker in terms of, will we continue our journey toward God alone, or will we sentence ourselves to more and more hell or purgatory in terms of coming back into earthly incarnations without our knowing our oneness with God? And you know, when you go into a death state, you can't just kind of cheat it and think, okay, at the last minute, I'll think of God and everything else will be erased. Because everything else suddenly comes flooding back into your mind. All the things that you regret, the things that you wished you had done and you didn't, the evil things that you've done in this life, if they've not been resolved within your consciousness, they all come back to you at that moment. And that is your prescription for your next life. Those are the lessons that you have to learn. It's a tremendous thing. And as I have said before, I was given an experience where I remembered leaving a body. It was my last breath, and as I exhaled, I came out. And then I was sitting with this great being of light. And I was reviewing my life. I was seeing it. And I saw where I had not kept my mind on my spiritual journey. I had gotten caught up with all the little minutiae of life. And I hadn't really accomplished what I came to do. And I was so disappointed, because I came into the life so determined to remember and to keep my mind upon God, and I had forgotten. And I felt devastated by it. But a firm determination grew inside of me. I will never forget that again. I will never forget that again. And somehow, when I came into this life, I remembered God. I didn't always understand what I was experiencing when I was young. I used to have what I called the thunder of silence. I didn't know what it meant. I was just 10, 11, 12 years old. I may have experienced it before then. But I remember distinctly at those ages. And I'd be sitting in my room, and the sound of the silence would get so terrific, it would be painful in my ears and in my head. And this was a tremendous sound of Om that was resonating. But I hadn't been taught about that. I didn't know what it meant when it said that the Word went out from God and became flesh, that it created everything that is and was the carpenter of this universe. I wasn't taught that. I didn't know it. And so I was left in a mystery. And I never talked to anybody about it, because I thought it was strange. Nobody around me talked about it, and I think many children are like this, that if it's not ever mentioned by anybody else, you don't bother to mention it to them. You don't want to be odd or different. But the memory stands very clear in my mind. And when I was coming of age, when I was turning 17, 18 years old, I looked around me, and I just couldn't be satisfied with this world. Something inside of me just was not entranced by it. I saw it all as futility. I saw it really all as suffering. I didn't have those words for it at the time. And I was in a state of suffering. I was a state of pain, and nothing I could see would take me out of that pain. And it wasn't until I discovered the more refined teachings of the spiritual path that I really began to see what I was intended for, what I came for. Now, I don't take a bit of credit for that because it went against my own will at the time. I didn't want that life. I didn't want to be different. I wanted to be the same as the others, but I couldn't. Something inside of me wouldn't let me. And so I felt coerced, really, into this path. And I'm very, very happy for it now. But at one time, I might have told you it was more of a curse than it was a blessing. Now I consider it a complete blessing. But at the time, I didn't understand it, and I didn't see it that way. But gradually, gradually, my understanding began to unfold. And as both Mother and Master said, the way, the pathway, is through the ajna. It is through this point between the eyebrows that we begin to really get some understanding, not in an intellectual way. Intellect will only carry us so far. And ultimately, intellect is only good for directing the mind. And the only thing that a true prophet to direct the mind upon is God. And when we begin to go in to this ajna, first we meditate upon it. We're on the outside of it. And then we begin to merge with it. I think that's a better description rather than saying going into it, because we don't go outside of ourselves. Really, we merge with that light. We see and feel that beautiful golden light. And it's right there in your ajna. When you still your mind and your third eye begins to open, you see it. And it's beautiful. And it's wonderful. And it is the vibration of creation, of material creation. And then we see, deeper than that, that beautiful blue. It's said to be the Christ blue. It's a deep, deep blue. And as we merge into that, we merge into that pure spiritual essence that is Christ consciousness. And then in the center of that is a tiny silver light, a pure essence of pearl, if you've looked at a beautiful pure pearl light. And it's got that silvery white hue to it. And then you merge into that light. And then your spirit expands. And it goes out into all space. And there is no limit. There's nothing that limits you at all. And there's no thought. There's consciousness. There's pure awareness. But to have a thought would, it feels like at that point, would sully that pure consciousness. And no thought comes to you, but you have pure awareness. And then if some thought comes to you, it comes from the purity of that light. It comes as a realization more than a thought. It comes whole and complete. And you are now merged in the consciousness of God. And this is beautiful beyond comparison. It is spectacular. It is, and yet it feels so familiar. It feels like you have actually come home. So you don't feel as if you become somebody different. You feel as if you truly become yourself. And this is a time of great rejoicing. And you hear the music of the spheres. You hear it as the Om. You hear it as various vibrations. And its purity is so stunning that in your physical body, you may have tears coming down your eyes because it's just so beautiful and so wonderful. And it fulfills your heart's desires. It's everything that you ever thought that you wanted. Everything that you sought in this world, all the knowledge, all the experiences, to have material things, to have wealth, to have to be noticed by people, to be appreciated by other people, all of that isn't really fulfilled until you come into that pure spiritual state of consciousness. And this is what you have come to achieve, really. Now, Getting established in that is another situation, because we can be lifted up and have experiences in that. And yet, if there's something that draws the mind back down to material creation, there's something more for us to work out. And that's all right. That's all right. We just take what it is. And then we come back down into this material creation, and we work on merging the spiritual with the mental and the material. And so that there is no difference between any of those. There is a complete resonance between the purity that we experienced in that transcendental state, and now it begins to manifest through this material form. And it comes down into the causal. And first of all, you notice on the way up, and also coming and bringing that light back down, that it's very important what we think. Now, everybody has the freedom to their own thought, but you realize the incredible importance of thought. Thought is what steers your ship, and it takes you in a certain direction. And if you change the thought, you change the direction of the ship, and therefore the location that you arrive at. And so you realize that every thought is a creation. And so you become ultimately accountable for that thought. Now, on the way up, you're attuning your thought to that highest light the best that you can. As you bring that light back down, you feel the inspiration of that pure spiritual consciousness manifesting as thought. And then that thought directs your emotions and your energy. And so now you have an alignment from spirit to thought to energy. And from energy then comes the physical manifestation. Now all of those are great creative places. But the thought is the most important, because that determines everything else. And so you must be aligned in with every thought that you have, that it comes from that pure spiritual essence. Now, some people might imagine that and say, well, I've lost my freedom. I no longer get to do what I want to do. But I ask you, how happy are you with where your mind has led you to? There's some good, but there's also the evil that goes along with it. When you surrender yourself, you feel that highest vibration manifesting throughout every part of your being. And I just want you to imagine that every part, every corner of your body, every part of your consciousness is filled with that light, with that intelligence, with that purity. And that you manifest that. And it's as natural as anything that you could imagine. And that is who you are in God. You see, you're not far from it. It's always with you. That's the magnificent thing. That's the incredible thing. It's the gospel, the good news that Jesus came to teach, is that you might achieve this. You see, before he came for that part of the world, everything was separation. There was very little that taught that you could become one with God. And he not only taught that, but he was the physical manifestation of it. And as a result, according to the story, he was crucified. Now, when that thought comes to you, and those teachings come to you, and you disregard them, or you think, no, that could be for somebody else, but not for me, you are crucifying the Christ all over again. Right within your own system, because you don't receive it. You don't really take it in. You don't allow the power of that truth to transform you and to bring you into alignment with it. Instead, you discard it. You throw it away as if it's so much trash. And as a result of that, the Christ within you is crucified. Now, of course, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. We do want to receive it. And so you prepare the mind. You see, the mind is so important here. And if the mind is pure, then it acts as a receptive soil that will take that seed in. And it will be good ground. It'll have the right fertilizer, it'll have the right moisture, it'll have all everything because you've prepared it. How do you do that? Through deepening your meditation, through chanting, through keeping your mind on God, through aspiring to serve those who are around you. And as you do those things, and you seek to serve, and you seek to love God, and to keep your mind on God, the mind gradually gets more and more purified until you are able to fully receive it, fully receive that seed. And when you do, that seed begins to shoot out roots, and then it begins to shoot out a trunk that reaches up towards the sky. And you begin to have experiences in that light, in that pure light that Krishna talks about. And it's more resplendent than 1,000 suns. And you feed on that light. You love that light. You love the bliss. You love the joy. You love the revelations that are coming to you. You love it more than you love the world. And there are times when there's a very definite choice that we have to make. Are we going to love God? Or are we going to love the world? As Jesus said, you cannot love God and mammon, because then it's a house divided against itself. You must decide. And when do those decisions come? It's when the world demands you to leave God behind somehow, through your attention, through doing some act that's not in accordance with that highest light. And when you're faced with those decisions, you must choose. And you have the freedom to choose, you see. You can choose. And every day we make those choices. Every day we make those choices. As soon as we wake up and open these two eyes out to this world, we make a choice. Do I keep my mind on God? Do I put Him first? Or do I put the world first? We're faced with many ethical decisions all through the day. Do we make God first? Do we go according to our highest light? Or do we give in to those things that take us away from the light? Now, there are many things that happen in this world that do not take us away from the light. We clothe this body. We shelter this body. We feed this body. And none of those things necessarily take us away from the light. But some of those things may, if we're overly attached to them. So we look at those attachments if they draw our mind away. And we cut them off. We become quite ruthless. We sharpen our swords. And the moment we see something that takes our mind away from God and makes us feel separate from it, we learn to cut it off right now. Not to wait. Because the longer we wait, as was described in the writing, the more those roots dig themselves into the ground. And it becomes much, much harder then to root it out. We can still do it, but it's much more difficult. And so you pull it out and pluck it out and throw it into the flame right away, instantly, not waiting a moment. Anything that divides you from God, anything that helps propel you towards God, you do more of. Isn't that a simple principle? If it takes you away from God, you cut it out, you throw it away immediately. If it draws you near towards God, you support it, you do more of it. And as you purify your mind, you will notice that you have greater love for God, that you are more attracted to those spiritual vibrations, and that you value those more than anything else in your life. As I was preparing today, I felt such great bliss. I felt that I was in an ocean of bliss. And sometimes the mind even begins to wonder, will I even be able to say anything when the time comes? Because I'm feeling this bliss and this upliftment so much, but somehow God makes it possible. And then, as Mother describes here, you know, when she first asked me to start giving talks, it wasn't my first choice, really. I'd rather be at the back of the room than the front of the room. But I had told her before that anything I could do to support her work, I would do. And then she asked me, now what would I be if I told her that I would do anything I could to support her work, and then she asked me to do something, and I say, no. Doesn't work that way, does it? If we're going to commit ourselves, we commit ourselves. So I said, yes. And gradually, as I gave talks, I felt something happen inside of me. She would tell me, pick a topic, have a title, a topic, something of that nature, have a few stories, and then turn it all over to God and let Him speak through you. And so I would do that. And then perhaps a Bible reading or some reading from the Scriptures or from one of the Masters. And what I experienced was a flow of thought and intelligence that was flowing through me, and I was a witness. I was observing as the words moved through me. And sometimes I learned things. Sometimes I didn't know that that was true. And I'd even ask myself afterwards, is that really true? I haven't had that experience yet. And then God would take me through some kind of experience at some point that would confirm it and show me that it was true. And sometimes I would think, oh, well, you should be a little more entertaining, God. You should make him laugh a little bit more, have a few more jokes, things like that, and I'd have some jokes ready, and the next thing I'd know, God would pick me up, and all the jokes were out the door. None of them were told, and I was off onto something right away. And I realized, of course, that I wasn't in control. I couldn't be in control. And as I speak to you, I generally, and Mother, I know, had the same experience. My eyes close, because they roll up to the third eye point, and I'm merged in Him. It's the most beautiful experience. And as Mother said in her writing, really, I receive so much from this opportunity to serve you in this way. And as far as I'm concerned, you're all, each and every one of you, completely realized beings, and you're just here just to humor me as I get to talk about God and feel this bliss and this joy flow through me. Now, it's a wonderful, wonderful play that God has put on here. But to do your part and to feel that kind of bliss, that kind of joy, that is what I wish for you more than anything else. Because there is complete freedom in it. It is so simple to go with God because you have one boss. And you think about you living from a human standpoint, and everybody's your boss. You have to please everybody, or you have to impress everybody, or you have to do something that interacts with all the other people. And so you have all these different bosses, but when you go with God, you have one person to please. And if God is pleased, if God smiles, if God says yes, that is sufficient. Master one time said that if everybody in the world disagreed with me, but if God was, I felt sure that God was directing me in this way, I would go with God. But really, think about it. The entire world disagreeing with you? That's some test. Sometimes we don't even want to tell somebody about our spiritual path because we think they might ridicule us, might not understand. But the whole world disagreeing with you? To have that kind of strength, to have that kind of inner assurance, is really something. And it is something to aspire for, so that we may truly put God first. You know, in Jewish tradition, they had it for so long. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The Lord is one. One God. One creator. One intelligence. One power. One light. There is only one. And it is a magnificent one. And something that you have the capacity to realize. It'd be something else if God just created this creation, wound it up like a big clock and just set it into motion and kind of forgot about it. But that's not how it is. God is manifesting as you. And that infinite intelligence is right inside of you. So it's time that we wake up. In the Gita it says, arise, awake, to wake up to this. And so we have Master's teachings, we have Mother's teachings, we have the Bhagavad Gita, we have the Bible. They all have the truth. And it is time. It is time. And this world is in need of it. You know, don't you think so? So you look out and you see the separation and the differences and the wars and the famines. None of it is necessary. And it is not God's creation in the sense of that highest vibration. It is as God is manifested as individuals. And then individuals with free will have chosen. And through their choices, it even affects the weather, it affects this earth, it affects everything. And we can change it all by changing ourselves. We can change it all by changing ourselves. It doesn't mean that it'll necessarily all change on the head of a pin. It can. It can. But it depends on the choices that everybody makes. But you have choice over one person in life. And that is you. That is you. So let us keep our minds always upon this Kutastha Chaitanya, this Ajna, this Christ consciousness, right here at the center of the forehead. Let us learn to tune in to that bliss, that light, that joy. You know, why not? Why not? Why tune into misery? What's the purpose in that? Why not tune in to the greatness, the true greatness that is residing inside of you already? And then let that light shine. Let it so shine that all those around you will get a greater sense of what God is. Through your thoughts, through your words, through your actions. Not because you're going out and trying to sell something, but just because naturally who you are. It does make a difference. It does make a difference. So many people think, it doesn't make any difference what I do. I can do whatever I want. It doesn't make any difference. I can use drugs, I can drink, I can be angry, I can do whatever I want. What does it matter to anybody else? But it does matter, you see. And we don't like that accountability. Not the ego, it sure doesn't. It wants its, what it calls its freedom. It's not freedom, it's entrapment. But it doesn't see it. It joyfully enters into the trap. Here's the bars clang behind it. Doesn't even hardly bother about that. Doesn't realize what it's done to itself. Doesn't realize what its real potential is. So let us no longer dally. Let us no longer be 1 foot in and 1 foot out. Let us put both feet in. Let us earn our association with the great Kriya masters, with the great saints around this world, and strive to live in that light. Because it is everything, I can assure you, it is everything. Now when we sing Sri Ram, what does it mean? It means victory to God. victory to the light. Victory, that it may be victorious first within ourselves, and then victorious going out across this world, around this world. So lift all mankind, all creation, into its infinite heights. So let us sing it just for a little bit. And as you sing it, I want you to think about the victorious light, first within your own heart center, shining and then expanding and then going out from you, and not just you, but going out, filling up this room, filling up this home, filling up this world, filling up this creation, and island universes, merging into astral universes, merging into causal realms, merging into infinite spirit. So let us sing. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. 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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Ram Om. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai 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 Ram Om. Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body, my mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. bliss. Amen. Pranam, I bow to the light within you.